Phoebe Pierpoint. Wow, what a story. What a story. Phoebe now coaches entrepreneurs for growth, but her backstory is absolutely incredible, inspiring, awesome. Difficult childhood. She realized in her teenage years that they weren't in the financial position that she was led to believe. She found out that she had to, you know, go to college on her own merit. So she worked hard, track and field. She ended up getting a scholarship, but then back injury led to surgery. Infection occurred. She had to leave school, was told just to go on disability, did not worry about it anymore. She refused to do so. Second surgery didn't go well. It's absolutely incredible what happens. She gets burdened with a big debt from her father, unbeknownst to her, right before her wedding. She starts doing RV. She gets, it's incredible, incredible story, where she came from, where she is now. Many people would get all that and just rest back and collect and not do anything. But she ends up contacting these entrepreneurs, begging them for a job, gets a job there, learns incredible amount of experience and information from them, and then now teaches other how to do it. It's absolutely inspiring. She's got a great light. She's very humble, and it's just an incredible story. I love talking with Phoebe. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Joey Pins. People ask me, how did I lose 130 pounds? The quick answer is always discipline. I started my business, wasn't paying attention to my health, was eating too much, you know, drinking too much sweets. My daughter was born. Next thing I know, I'm pre-diabetic, I have hypertension. I knew something had to change. Discipline. I, like many of you, have faced many challenges in your career, in your family, in your life, in your faith. How did you attack them? How did you approach them? How did you solve them, hopefully? It all had to have some degree of discipline. I'm also asked, how did you found and start a tech business that lasted over 25 years? Discipline. I was committed to it, enjoyed technology, didn't enjoy some aspects of it, but knew it was necessary. Discipline. Our podcast mission, how do we use discipline to better ourselves and society? Join me, please, as I talk to interesting people and discuss how they use discipline in their family, in their passion, in their careers, and how it helped them. Our podcast vision, growth through learning from others. Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. It'll be light and serious. Join us, please. Thank you for consideration.
My goodness. Thank you so much for your time today, Phoebe Pierpoint. So excited. Why do entrepreneurs often get in their own way?
Well, it's the same reason all of us humans do the crazy things that we do, right? Because our mind plays tricks on us. Our mind is not something that is, or the way that we think is not something that we have chosen, but rather something that has happened to us as a result of our life experience and just various things. And so while we think we're being rational, while we think that we're choosing how we operate and how we make decisions, we in fact are not most of the time.
And your background is a tribute to that. So at a certain point, you realize that your family isn't in the best financial position it can be. So you decide to focus on academics and athletics to get into school. You have a belief that education is going to get you where you need to go. And you go, you excel, you get a scholarship, track and field. But then you get an injury. Can't study. And you're forced to leave.
Yeah, education was everything to me my entire life. That was the one thing that I just was really good at because I would study harder than anybody else. I wasn't particularly naturally smart necessarily, but I knew that basically the formula was if you study really hard, you can probably, you know, get good grades. And with good grades, you can have the keys to the way out, more money, more success, and, you know, everything that you need in life. So that was always really, really, really important to me from a very young age. And I got into one of the best schools in the country, arguably. and on a essentially a full ride athletic scholarship, because the academic scholarships there were at a level that I would have never, never met. But yeah, pretty early on in my, I mean, I already knew I was injured, I guess. Something was wrong, really, in high school, but I didn't know just how bad it was going to get. But turns out that I had a slipped disc, or I had had one for a while, and now had arthritis and all kinds of things in my spinal cord that was making it very painful, and my legs were going numb, and everything kind of broke down from there.
Get surgery and bad things happen.
Yeah, the surgery made it worse. So I recovered from that first surgery. It made it a lot worse because they basically just cut off the part of the disc that was bulging, which means that you have even less support in between your bones. And so then the bones are just rubbing on each other more, and they're pinching the nerves. And at that point, it was just so bad that I couldn't keep up with my schoolwork. I couldn't keep up on the team, which I had been benched for a while at that point. I was on so many medications. I was drinking alcohol with my medications to amplify the effect, which is just bad news, right? So I ended up dropping out of college and moving back home to live at home and see just what we can do, what more further treatments I could get. So all my dreams went out the window.
Sure. And things don't go as planned, as you mentioned before. But then, right. I just want to build context here, Phoebe. And then MRSA, 50% chance.
Yeah. So then I had a second surgery, a more final surgery. That's a fusion, right? They didn't want to do that on me because I was young, but they finally gave in, did a second surgery. And a couple weeks after that surgery, my incision just was not healing properly. And it looked really weird. And then one day I woke up with a very high fever, and rushed me back to the hospital. They looked at my incision. It was clearly very infected. And they took a sample to see if it was MRSA. It actually wasn't MRSA. If it was MRSA, I wouldn't be here. So basically they said, we're going to see if it's MRSA, because if it is, you need to make arrangements and all the things. But if it isn't MRSA, then, we basically have a 50-50 shot at beating it. Whether or not it will be, able to be treated with antibiotics, we don't know, because every strain is different. So they put me on a PICC line antibiotic for 8 weeks. And when they took me off, they're like, well, we'll see. If you live, then great. And if not, well, we're in trouble. But I did. So
you most certainly did. And but then you ended up looking into alternative medicine, which became the happy ending.
Yes.
You looked at alternative medicine that helped.
Well, so after I recovered from the staph infection, after my third surgery to clean that all out and everything, the Western medicine doctors, basically, I still had pain after all that. So it didn't help my pain. They basically said, there's nothing more we can do for you. You should just go on disability for the rest of your life. Yeah. And, don't worry about working or anything like that. Just collect a paycheck. Well, I'm not the type of person to do that. If you really need that, that's fine. However, I have always been a very ambitious person, always wanted a lot for my life. So I didn't want to do that. And, essentially found solutions in Eastern medicine. A couple years down the road, I had a huge, a lot of illnesses creep up because of what I'd been through. And I checked myself into a holistic health clinic for like 2 weeks and started going down that route. At that time, I did get fired from my job because I couldn't keep up with my work. So it's like every time these things just get ripped out from under me. About 18 months later, I was in remission with a lot of things I was dealing with and was able to kind of look at going back to work and figuring out how to have a career again.
Before we get into the, RV a couple of years, so you find out that your father, who had passed a lot of debt on to you and to your mother.
Yeah. My dad was, I think the easiest way to say it is like a narcissist, just not functioning, just couldn't handle his own trauma and his own demons, really, and you know, would have intermittent success throughout his life. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom with us, so she didn't have a whole lot of control over, you know, how that stuff went. And he was just, for a period of time, was not paying taxes. And so that those fees and things were accumulating because he hadn't got caught yet. And once he got caught, I think I was like 21, 22 maybe. What I had a warrant out for my arrest because my dad had been filing income under my name and then also not paying taxes on that money. And so I it was about a couple months before I was going to get married and I got served with a warrant for my arrest. So that was fun. I had no idea any of this was going on. My mom kind of had suspicions of it, but it all kind of came crashing down. So I had this huge tax burden to pay off. Obviously, we hired a lawyer. We got this thing to a place where my mom could basically just pay it off over time to clean up all of his mess. I didn't have to pay anything. But yeah, it was not good.
Not good at all. No. So you're married now with all this debt. You decide you don't have your job anymore. You go by, I think you said a year and a half with your husband in an RV, which sounds romantic and glamorous.
Yeah. It was, I basically just at that point, because I had lost everything twice, I kind of was just like, I'm tired. Like, I don't want to build this up again. I don't want to do this again. Maybe I can just live a simple life with, you know, no money, very, you know, whatever. Just not have too much. Yeah. The sort of minimalist thing. Yes. So we sold everything. We sold all of our possessions. We had already gotten rid of our house at that point because of my medical bills and everything, but sold all of our possessions and moved into an RV. And we were just going to travel and stay on BLM land for free and kind of do the RV thing. And this was before it was popular. Right now, it's definitely a thing. This was, I don't even know, maybe 8 years ago or so. So it was definitely not popular or common. And we ended up doing that for 2.5 years, actually, all over the US and Mexico. We were on a reality show, which was fun. And it was hard because you still need money. Surprise. I know.
Yeah.
You know, hard to believe, but you still need money to live. And I pieced together a bunch of weird jobs. I taught English to Chinese kids. I worked at an Amazon warehouse. I did some RV online marketing job thing. So it was very sporadic.
You talk about at one point you said we can't spend any more money until, you know, for another 15 days or something. So you're trying to, it's just amazing what we have to do when we have to do it.
Yes. Yes, I am definitely a survivor. I'll always figure out a way.
Yeah. Finally get so frustrated and you find five entrepreneurs, you reach out to them and one ends up hiring you to be pretty much an apprentice.
Yeah. I came to the realization that I did want more for myself and then I knew I was capable of more. I had just been burnt out and tired and I didn't really know what to do other than the career that I had that I got fired from. I didn't have any other skills or really any other options because I didn't have any other work experience. So I was like, well, I'm going to have to get a job somewhere where I can learn a skill was my thought. And at that time, the sort of online entrepreneur world was really becoming more popular. And I was like, wow, that's cool. Being able to work from home seems like, the way to go.
Yeah,
exactly. Because if there's one thing that I had learned from this experience in the RV is I did want to have that freedom to live life on my own terms. And I didn't ever again want to have to be put in a position where I would have to compromise my health to make money. Because that's essentially what had happened in my first career. So I just made a short list of the people online that I thought were doing cool things and reached out to them. Two of them contacted me. One of them hired me. So that's how I got my first job in the world of online entrepreneurship.
And they sensed that you were hungry and a hard worker. And so it helped everyone. So I think you said you're there for about a year, year and a half. Tell me what you learned there.
Man, I learned, wow, so much. So one of the big things that I had realized was that I'd always relied on my ability to kind of just pick anything up and do decently well at it to get by almost my entire life with sports, with academics. You know, I kind of was able to, if I wasn't good at it, I would be able to get good at it. And I'd always kind of just relied on that. And so when I was thrust into this world that I really knew nothing about, I wasn't able to pick it up just easily.
You were a quick learner. Interesting.
And so nobody was going to sit with me and like explain it to me because they're paying me money. They expect me to do a job, you know? And so it definitely was very hard. It caused a lot of stress and anxiety. I remember taking Pepto-Bismol before every single daily call for like a month straight because I was so stressed. And so just really didn't know what I was doing at all. So that was hard. However, the nature of it being a startup was in my favor because kind of no one really knew what they were doing in a different way than me, but it was very kind of chaotic and there was a lot of need for people to just step in and do random things. And I was more than willing to do that. So I definitely found ways to make myself valuable very easily, but it wasn't without a lot of stress. And I essentially learned how a business is built and run from working with that company.
But you're willing at this point because of where you are, because I don't want to say rock bottom, but you hit such a low point that you're so hungry, you're willing to put in the time, you're willing to put in the work. Now, when you say run a business, any kind of business, is it P&L, is it operations, is it sales, is it marketing, leadership? Give me some of the
dynamics. So this company is called Scale2X. They specialize in helping entrepreneurs at about the, well, really half a million mark, anywhere to multiple millions, systemize and scale their business. So they work primarily with operational support, anywhere from sales and marketing to hiring, any kind of operational support, streamlining all of the systems of the business so that they are positioned to scale rapidly.
And it's mostly around operations, sales, and marketing.
Just any operations, hiring systems, like hiring operations, sales systems, all of it, really.
Was there any particular area that interests you more?
I loved systems. I am very like a very strategic, logical person, and I like to follow strategy. Even though that hasn't been most of my life, there've been very little strategy to it, but I love when I can see a path from A to Z. And so seeing that here's the various levers of your business value chain, you know, pull this lever, pull that lever based on, you know, what you need made so much sense to me. And then having like KPIs to measure the health of the various elements of the business was super satisfying.
So key performance indicators to measure everything. So in the operations, were you doing a lot of standard operating procedures? Are you setting up SOPs? Are you like, so operations can mean so many things. It could be so wide.
Yeah. Well, so what they do is they really diagnose where the business is at, what the gaps are, whether it's very rarely in lead gen, but whether it's lead gen or fulfillment or, you know, sales conversion, right? It analyzes like where is the challenge and then looks at how do we optimize for that area that we can get basically remove that blocker from the pipeline so everything will run a lot smoother. And that means the standard operating procedures for sure as to how things are getting communicated. It might mean tweaking the sales script. It might mean hiring a salesperson. It just depends really on what's needed. So kind of everything.
Soon from when you started, do you actually get to work on some of these clients? That's very exciting, Phoebe.
When I started, I didn't work with the clients. I worked in the back end. So I was only making $15 an hour
Right. Like, of course, they're not going to start you. Right.
Yeah. Rough. And I helped with a lot of things. I helped make, I helped write SOPs. I helped with scheduling and managing the masterminds and putting together itineraries for that, running the masterminds. I helped with content management, just organizing all of the content to be ready and get posted and get done. Little bit of everything, really.
For a year and a half, you decided to branch out. Tell me about that decision.
Yeah. Well, essentially what happened is that the business I started with had grown now, and they really needed people that were experts at that point rather than generalists. And I was definitely a generalist, right? And so they just really didn't have a position for me at the company at the point that it had grown. And I totally understood that. It was, you know, sad, but I understood. And at that point, I had a lot of inquiries anyway for people that needed integrators or operations managers type people in some of the smaller startups. So I started taking on clients in that way. And absolutely love that work. Love it. I love the strategy. I love solving business problems and helping businesses grow and cleaning up operations and making it run all smoothly. So started doing that for a bit and took on a few clients in that area.
Very cool. And you do an assessment, or do they come with you with a problem in that stage?
Well, it wasn't very organized. It was kind of like I would just get on these calls with people and I'm like, hey, I could really help you out. They'd pay me, you know, a monthly stipend. I'd go in, I'd look at, you know, where things are at, have a weekly meeting with the CEO, and we'd work through kind of the projects or the challenges of the business, as well as me helping to run the day to day. So helping to hire, helping to manage the VAs, helping to organize events being put on, kind of, again, everything.
So this, of course, brings us on to your life architect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I saw and what was frustrating for me in this role was that I could have the best strategy in the world. I could have all the answers. I could have some great solutions. But for some reason, we don't always do what we know we should do. So I would have these solutions, these strategies and whatnot, and it would just continuously get derailed and sabotaged by the CEO or by the team or other people involved. And that was really frustrating because I couldn't make them, you know, do things well or efficiently. I couldn't make them, you know, grow in a strategic way. And so I just got tired of really butting heads all the time with these business owners.
Wow. I get that too. Sometimes when I open up the conversation, it's like, why do they get in their own way?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a lot of times they say they want to grow and they say they want to, but then they don't really want to do what it takes.
Right. Right. And, you know, entrepreneurs get into entrepreneurship often because they want to do what they want, you know, causes problems. So I also at that time had been going through a lot of my own personal growth, because sort of a lot of the demons from my past started coming up at this time. Entrepreneurship will have a way of doing that to you. You're suddenly in charge, you are also faced with yourself and all of the things that are in the way. It's really hard to lead your own business, you know? And so I started getting help from a coach that was working with me on my own personal growth journey. And I did some therapy and all kinds of things and basically had my own personal breakthrough and of this world of personal development and therapy that I had no idea about ever before. And that was really transformative. And that also made me even more frustrated with the work I was doing because I could see their problems and I couldn't really help them, you know? And so I made the decision that I wanted to do the personal growth work, the mindset work instead, or in addition to the business elements. So I hired a coach to teach me how to coach those things, and went that direction.
And that, you know, asking for help it can be very, very hard for people.
It can. Yeah.
It is for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, again, it depends too on your experience, because typically if you have trouble asking for help or you don't have trouble for asking for help, it's based on the experience you've had with that in the past, right? Mm. One of my winning strategies has always been to ask for help, because I never had sort of the resources or the privileges to be able to do it on my own. So I was very used to asking for help and having that work out well. Even just getting hired by some random entrepreneur felt like asking for help to me, you know? And it had always kind of worked out. So I learned that that was a strategy that I could trust. Whereas other people may have asked for help in the past and it was a disaster or it was embarrassing or whatever, and they don't learn that as a part of their options.
Certainly is. So at this point, do you feel you're an entrepreneur?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Because you are. But I mean, at the point of you getting that coach.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I always had felt like an entrepreneur because I was never good at following the rules or being okay with like the status quo. Because I always had a bigger vision than what was put in front of me. And I would always fight that. I have been fired 7 times in my life, fired or let go. And I believe that that is primarily because of my inability to really just do what I'm told. Because I'm like, this is stupid.
What is that?
This way.
And so how do you help entrepreneurs now?
So I help entrepreneurs by helping them see the mindset blocks, the beliefs, and the ways of thinking that are in the way of them being able to get what they want. And really uncovering that. Because if we really knew, I mean, sometimes we know some things, but we don't really know. We have sort of a surface level idea of it. We may even joke about it, or it's like sort of part of our funny personality. But what's really behind that and 10 more layers deep is something really potentially quite sinister that we wouldn't like if we knew it was there.
But as we talked about in the beginning, sometimes entrepreneurs think they want to grow and think they want to do things, but then it's hard to get action out of them.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
How do you overcome?
Well, on my initial call with people, I'm very clear about what you're going to expect in our work together. So I don't think that people are going to opt in to working with me if they're ultimately not wanting to do that work. And occasionally I'll get people that, or if people hear me on something like this or whatever, and they come to me, they already know that this isn't some like feel good, you know, trip to success sort of a situation. I'm very honest about that. And the people that want that, they really want that. They want the real deal. They want to see those dark corners of themselves, you know? So I don't have too much trouble with the people that do end up in my world, but there is certainly the majority of the world does just kind of want that surface level stuff, you know, which is fine.
Yeah, they certainly do. And so how do you assess where they are and where they want to be?
Yeah, well, what we really look at are, we start with the symptoms of what they're experiencing, right? And we look for connections or patterns across multiple different symptoms. And there's almost always patterns that we can find, right? And so once we've kind of established like what the pattern is, then it's a simple discovery process of where did that come from? Like, why do you feel that way? What is the fear behind that? And when did you first feel that or experience that? And, you know, sometimes people don't know, but it always eventually comes out. And once we can identify what the fear is there, the fear or the belief or whatever, then we can start to rewrite that and retrain ourselves to essentially wire our brains differently to create different ways of operating in the world and business.
You have an assessment on the website that kind of goes through these areas. I took the liberty of taking it yesterday. And it's interesting. I take a lot of these assessments, but this was very different.
Yeah. It's based really just on kind of assessing the different areas of life and really kind of how satisfied you are with the different areas of life. Because most people will say like, oh, are you happy? Oh, I'm happy. I'm happy. Mm. Because we don't want to believe we're not happy, right? And so we tell ourselves we're happy. But then if we really look at, well, what does that mean? And what does that mean for you and why? You know, the truth starts coming out, and we're very good at gaslighting ourselves. And yes, what we don't want to do that. We want to be able to be honest with ourselves. It's not a bad thing. And we have this relation to anything negative or bad as something we don't want in our life, but that's not really true. That actually makes us more vulnerable to unhappiness and frustration and depression and all kinds of things.
Very, very well said, Phoebe. So it's like mindset, physical health, operational excellence, wealth and career, connection and purpose. You know, as I'm doing the assessment, I'm thinking to myself, well, this is how I answer this. I wonder those who know me well, how they would.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Well, and brings up a good point, because a lot of times people are internalizing other people's opinion or views on themselves, right? Mm. So the first half of my life, I lived for my parents. I lived the life my parents wanted for me. It had nothing to do with what I wanted at all. Zero. I'd never thought about what I wanted. And so by their measure or by, you know, their definition, I was doing a good job. Right? But internally, I know that I'm not happy. I'm not doing a good job. And so that cognitive dissonance creates a problem. And just because somebody thinks you don't operate well, but you think you operate well, doesn't mean anybody is right or wrong. It's based on certain people's perceptions. And we don't look at what other people think of you in this case of our work together. That might just be a signal that like that person's probably not your person, or as your behavior changes, that person will be happier. But we're not looking at what other people are seeing, because they're seeing it through their lens of their trauma and their ideas about the world.
Mm-hmm. You know, it occurs to me, Phoebe, is like when you're talking to a prospect, you know, an entrepreneur, I mean, knowing your journey, mm-hmm, helps frame who you are. You got to a point and, you know, the adversity, and you got hungry and you reached out and you learned so much. Do you need to know that information about the person you're working with?
Mm. Well, I do have them fill out sort of I use the word assessment. It's a different type of assessment, but like a form about what they know about themselves. But no, not necessarily, because what we'll do is a symptom will come up, and that's when you dive into looking at like, where did this first show up? How has this shown up in other areas? But that tends to come out over time. I work with people, most of the people I work with me for an average of 3 years. So I'm going to know everything about you at that point, right? You know? But it starts really with the symptoms, and then it works backwards from there. We don't start with like where therapy starts, which is tell me the history of your life. You know?
Yeah, therapy kind of looks backwards, whereas coaching looks forward.
Correct. Yes.
And you're a coach.
Yes. Yeah. And we only venture into the backwards to the extent that we need to inform the present. So.
What kind of, through your journey, Phoebe, I mean, what kind of advice, what kind of self-care practices do you advocate now for people listening, anybody, even for myself, for anyone, because you're such a testament to where you were and where you are now.
Hmm. It's a really good question. The biggest thing that I am, and I'm always working on this in myself too. Yeah. The biggest thing I find for entrepreneurs or high achievers is, and this is going to sound terrible, they're not going to want to hear this, but okay, what the biggest benefit you can have as an entrepreneur, high achiever, is to actually look at how you can enjoy the present more.
Mm.
We are always looking ahead. And I get it. Yeah. I really do. I really, really do. I catch myself in this loop constantly. But the minute that I start to feel down or bummed out or, you know, mildly depressed or anything, it is because I have gotten out of myself and started moving into the future again.
Right.
And we are so susceptible to that as humans, but especially as high achievers. And we can never achieve the future if we are not in the present. Ever. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but the key to the future is always, 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 always the present.
I smell the roses. Yeah, I mean, I find myself doing the same thing, Phoebe. You know, I just constantly, you know, when this happens, I'll be, you know, that'll be great. When this, you know, and it's just a constant loop. And, you know, another thing I found that, I know I suffer from this personally, I don't celebrate victories enough.
When
you reach a goal, you need to sell, however it may be. It doesn't mean a month trip in Tahiti. It could just mean a great dinner or whatever, but you have to celebrate it. That way you real that, so you just don't pass it by. It's important.
Right, right. Well, and the trouble with that is that our minds are always ahead of our physical results. So by the time we've achieved things in reality, our mind is already 30 steps ahead. So that's, they're never, you know, unless we could just make things happen instantaneously when we think about it, which we can't yet, then we are always going to be ahead of our physical results. And that in itself presents a problem.
Sure it does. I heard a great quote recently. The best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago.
Right.
The second best time is right now.
Right. Yeah. 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 And that's, you know, on, it's never too late, right?
Yeah.
To, but it's going to take 20 years, you know? Yeah. So there's actually a lot tied up in that metaphor.
Wonder how, what happens when you have an entrepreneur and they say all the right things, you onboard them, but then within a couple of months, they start showing kind of their true self, you know, the honeymoon is over and they don't really want to make the changes. Do you have a talk with them? Do you walk away? What happens then?
Yeah, it happens. And it's happened a couple times. And I'm very direct, as you may have been able to tell. And I call that out. And they almost always say, you know, I know you're right. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm like, well, it's not that there's something wrong with you, but we need to acknowledge it and be willing to work on it. So how do we work on this? So that becomes the work then instead of whatever we thought we were working on. And so that is also one of the things that's unique about the work that I do, in that what we start working on is almost never what we're working on in a month or 3 months, because what we start working on is just a vehicle to see what we really need to work on.
Yeah, that's very reflective, you know, and it's interesting to me that should it really just end with entrepreneurs? I mean, you could say the same thing about just leaders generally, just direction and people with some kind of authority in general.
Well, for sure. And I have worked with some, quite a few corporate clients or corporate leaders. The reason that I focus on entrepreneurs is because they have more agency over their business and their life. And it's just more, I can just do more with that.
Right.
You know? So
more flexibility there. Yeah. I could certainly see that. Yeah. Good. I want to take one trip back. So are you a full believer in Eastern medicine now?
Well, that is a difficult question. One of the ways I like, someone once explained it this way, and I really liked it. Western medicine is sort of like the fire, what do you call it? Firemen that come in and they put out the fire in the burning house, right? They hit you with a surgery or a med that fixes whatever is going on. But then what you're left with is like a charred inside, right? Then what you need are the carpenters and the electricians and the things that come in and afterwards to rebuild everything stronger than before. And so that's kind of how I look at it. Now,
interesting.
What I will say as a caveat to that, though, is if you can avoid the firemen in the first place, that's ideal. And that's what I would encourage people to look at. And that is really hard to do because you don't feel the fire. You don't see the like fire danger happening until there's a fire. And so it's very hard to be disciplined enough to avoid those fires from catching on.
Yeah, which brings me to my next point. I started my business, my entrepreneurial journey in the 90s, and I was not paying attention to myself, Phoebe. And I was eating way too much, and I was stopped playing soccer and tennis. I was working 14, 16-hour days. You're no stranger to this. And drinking soda and unhealthy habits, of course. Got myself up to 340 pounds. The doctor says to me, if I don't lose the weight, I'm not going to see my daughter graduate. She had just been born. You just talked about not letting this stuff happen, and your body is so good. I didn't feel like I was 340 pounds. It just adapted. Sure, I was out of breath, but I just got used to it, when I see pictures of myself now back then, of course, the first thing I want to do is elbow my buddies and say, why'd you let me get there? Joking, of course, because you don't feel it, So I took the next 6-7 months and, my daughter's born. This is a change of life here, and I lost a lot of weight, about 130 pounds. And you just losing weight's very tough. You just can't look at it as a finishing line. You got to keep it off. Many of us go back. And people always ask me how, like there's some secret. And I always say discipline. You just mentioned discipline. And that's what I use to get it off. People, there's no secret. I'm not going to tell you anything you don't know. If you want to get it off, you will. And I use discipline. I wonder, given your extraordinary background and your journey, how discipline plays a role in your life then and now.
Well, so I like the word discipline and I use it. But ultimately, what discipline is a tool to create a new identity. And that identity is going to be what sees you through to permanent results and transformation. So discipline, you could be disciplined forever, but typically people struggle to be disciplined for long periods of time, right? So what we want to use discipline to do is create a new way of being. And that's what's permanent. Once you identify with it, there's no going back, unless you designed and we want to change it. And that's
a
what we want
tool.
To- yeah.
A tool to create a new identity. Have you always had this view?
No. I was muscling everything. And that's why I kept burning out and, having lots of health stuff. And no, I just was a really good muscler.
Yeah. Well, you're a quick learner and you adapted. I mean, when you were in track and field in high school and then in college, discipline probably meant something very different to you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The things that Yeah. That was rough, man. I mean, I was NCAA Division II. It was no joke.
Long practice sessions, dedication, off season work, weight room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very different.
Yeah. I don't recommend that as a way of life. Right. I recommend it as a tool to creating the person you want to be.
And when you coach entrepreneurs now, does discipline come up?
Absolutely. Entrepreneurs struggle with it because, like I said, they got into entrepreneurship so they could do what they wanted.
Yeah, freedom.
Yeah. And so what I help them to do is look at using discipline temporarily to create a new identity, a new way of being. And because entrepreneurs are pretty good at setting a timeline for something like, okay, I'm going to do this hard thing for a period of time. And then I won't have to do it again. And so that's kind of how I sell them on it is like, hey, if you can discipline yourself, and I know it's painful, but it's going to be one small thing at a time, your identity will shift. And this is also why a year into my work with them, they're like, holy crap. I can't believe I used to think that. All of these things have happened and I didn't even think about it. I'm like, because it's you now. It's no longer discipline that's driving it. It just is you. And so you don't even realize that you've changed, which is exactly what we want, because that's not hard. That's just you existing.
Fascinating perspective. Phoebe, pure point, what motivates you?
What motivates me? Well, motivation shifts over time. Initially, what motivated me was to be the person that I needed for other people, right? Somebody to be a mentor, a guide, validate my path, help me talk through things. And also because I felt like I had a unique perspective in a way that wasn't really in the market. So I wanted to bring my unique perspective to people that resonate with me. I wanted to help people see that they have the power over their health. They have the power over their business. They have the power over their life. A lot of people are stuck feeling like they're at the whim of genetics or the market or, you know, narcissists or evil people in the world or whatever, right? The president. and I do firmly believe that you can flourish in any environment that is out there. And we give our power away way too easily to thinking that if this person doesn't win the election, everything's going to shit. Or if that happens in my life, I can't do anything. And, you know, and we sell ourselves short in that way. And so that was a big motivating factor as well, because if I had listened to the surgeons telling me to go on disability, well, who knows where I would be, right? If I had listened to, you know, the 2008 market crisis, and now, oh my gosh, no one can make any money and inflation and blah, 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 like I wouldn't even try, right? And so that was kind of my initial motivation. What motivates me now is, I mean, selfishly, it's partly my own journey to further embody and learn these practices and continue to expand my knowledge so that I can continue to synthesize things that are viewed as quite complex into something simple that people can understand, like health or business or whatever. It's my favorite thing to do.
Impact.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you measure success?
Well, that is funny because this is going to sound weird too. I don't believe there's such a thing as not success if you're doing the work. So if I only can't be successful if I'm letting myself down or not showing up and doing the work. So whatever happens is success as a result of me following the journey, doing the work. Now, initially, of course, it was like get to six figures and then, you know, whatever. But I don't need any – I'm not really motivated by money at this point. I don't need to grow in that way necessarily. There's also no way I could say, oh, if I impact 100,000 people, then that's success. That's not necessarily true. It might be one person, one very key person that has tons of impact. I don't know. I can't control that. And that goes back to staying focused in the present, right? Now, do we need to have goals and measures? Of course, yes. However, we also can't try to control the way that that's going to happen.
That's very interesting. I want to soak that in for a second. So you believe that there's no thing as to be unsuccessful?
Yeah, not necessarily. Not unless you just aren't doing the work, right? Showing up.
Yeah, so it's not – so running the race is success.
Correct.
Even if you don't finish.
Right, yes.
Interesting.
Because you can weaponize goals against yourself by saying, I must finish the race, but you finish the race broken. That is not a win.
And does this permeate through most parts of your life?
I guess so. Yeah, I would say so. Again, it's kind of something I'm embodying, and so it's hard to see it, but yeah, I would say so. I'm not a blind goals follower person.
Right.
I used to be.
On through in your Phoebe. You're still a young lady in my eyes, by the way. But would you change anything?
I mean, I'm not really one of those people that's like, I wouldn't change anything for the world because it made me who I am. Obviously, right. I could design my perfect life. It wouldn't look the way it did, you know? But if I look at what I did with what I was given, I'm very proud of that, you know? Would I wish it could be different? Of course. I'm not, you know, one of those people that's on that train. But, you know, I think I did a good job with what I was given.
I'm going to say you did an extraordinary job, but you're a very humble person. It's incredible to me when I talk to people with such adversity like that, and, you know, I don't want to get, your father passed away, you know, with cancer, but he did it in a not the best way. And your sibling has issues as well. And, you know, it's the family dynamic is something that we can't control. And all of this made you the successful person that you are now. And so you could have shut yourself down and went on assistance. But not only did you grow yourself, but you're helping others do the same. So you're getting this information that you've derived and are able to concisely practice and advocate and show others. That's the remark. That's the trait of a remarkable person in my eyes, Phoebe.
Well, I appreciate that. I will accept that. Thank you.
Yeah, it's incredible to me. And you give me inspiration, Phoebe. I was so excited when we set this up. And, you know, listening to your story, listening to the way you never once say, oh, God, that sucks. And, you know, oh, man, it's like I was there and I learned and, you know, I had to do these things. And, but I'm better now. I'm much better now. And not only am I better now, but I'm going to help others be better. It's wonderful, Phoebe.
Yeah, well, I do believe that there's no way you can have the reward without the challenges. I mean, that's just kind of the paradox of life. And if you can just accept that, then you can use it to your advantage. If it's people that try to fight that experience a lot of pain, right? So, for example, my life has really gotten relatively easy, you know, in the last few years. And the hardest, the thing that motivated me for a long time was the fact that I almost died. So they over-medicated me in the hospital. They had to restart my heart, plus all the back stuff, right? So I almost died. And it was so bad that I was like leaving my body. Whatever that means, I don't know. I'm not an expert in that field, but it was bad. And I had to will myself to come back. And so that is scary to face death. And so I was like, I'm going to make the most of my life. And that motivated me for a really long time. The fact that I had overcome this huge challenge, and it's been, you know, 6, 8 years. I don't even know. I'm so bad at time, dates and times and things. And I can feel myself sort of getting soft. So I told my husband a few months ago, I was like, we need to do something really hard. I need to feel some pain again. Yeah. And he's like, I've got just the thing. There's this 100-mile bike route in Utah. It's an off-road trail. We can, the goal is to do it in a day. And so I'm like, sure, let's do it. I haven't biked in like, I don't know, like 10 years, so long since just out of college. And we're doing it in a couple months. So we're just started training for this, and I hate biking. I hate biking for long periods of time. But the thing is, if you don't hate it and it isn't hard, then it's not actually having the effect it needs to have. And I have so much fun doing hard things. It's hard to find something that's hard enough.
Right.
So keeping that part of you alive and keeping the relationship to challenge and adversity and pain in your life is really important. Not bad, but it's really important. And hopefully it's really your control and not things you can't control.
That old, Jim quote, no pain, no gain. Yeah, it is easy to kind of slip back into that. I was doing triathlons for a while when I was losing the weight. And, I love to swim. I tolerate the bike and I hated the run, but I still had to practice them. And, you feel that pain and it's just, it's all worth it. Worth it.
Because so many people are motivated or think they're motivated by eliminating pain, which is impossible. And they set themselves up for an impossible journey where you have to look at it as like a part of the process, as data, as, life lesson. If you're looking as that as the measure of success of how much pain you don't have or are avoiding, well, that's not a good place to be.
I'm from the East Coast. They say, don't live in New York City too long, you'll get too hard. And they say, don't live in California too long, you'll get too soft. So
I kind of have both. And a lot of time in both places. Yeah.
Me too. Phoebe, thanks again so much. Anybody listening, how can we get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I am pretty low key. I don't do much online, but I will respond to you if you send me a message on Instagram. My handle is uncage_me. You can send me a message. Happy to chat with you. Always open to jumping on a call with somebody. So I'm pretty low key.
Very good. And then, yeah, of course, you're on LinkedIn. I'll put all those in the show notes as well. And thank you so much for your time, Phoebe. You be well. Now, if I'm in the greater area there in the Midwest where you are, perhaps, though, we can all get a cup of coffee together.
Perfect. I'd love that. Thank you so much.
You be well. Have a great day.
Bye.
Thank you for listening and or viewing Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. Please share this episode with one or two of your friends who you think may benefit from the episode. Our website, www.joeypins.com. There you find lots of resources and you could join our mailing list. Please follow us on all our social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Podcast information, the video version of our podcast is on YouTube. Please subscribe. Audio is on all major podcasting platforms. Please follow them. And if you like it, please consider giving 5-star rating. Would really appreciate that. Would you like to financially support the podcast? You can go to our Patreon site. Consider $5, $10, or $20 a month. There's all kind of plans that we have there. It's like a one-time payment. What is this podcast episode worth to you? $25, $50, $100, $500, $1,000, $5,000. You be the judge. You can go to our PayPal account to do that as well. Thank you again for listening or watching Joey Pins Discipline Conversations.